From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you the latest insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most pressing issues that are facing you and your family. So for the next hour, we'll navigate the conflict and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
Everything so far indicates that this was a terrible accident. At this time, we have no other indication, no other reason to believe there's any intentional act here.
That was President Biden earlier today after the catastrophic collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. Now, unfortunately, we live in a time when one of the first questions asked after an event like this is, was it a terrorist attack?
What I would say that is unique about the environment that we're in right now in my career is that while there may have been times over the years where individual threats could have been higher here or there than where they might be right now, I've never seen a time where all the threats, or so many of the threats, are all elevated all at exactly the same time.
That was FBI Director Christopher Wray before a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing last December, underscoring the current level of terrorist threat in America. And one of the areas of potential risk is America's electric power grid. We're going to talk with Texas Congressman Randy Weber, who is a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Well, unfortunately, last week's bad budget deal was not the end. When Congress returns, it's right back to working on the budget, next year's budget. But with a historically slim Republican majority, soon to be 217 to 213, could the Republicans actually lose control of Congress for the first time in the middle of a congressional session? Now, it's possible because of stunts like this from Marjorie Taylor Greene.
But this is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
As I said when Matt Gaetz moved to remove Kevin McCarthy, this is self-centered foolishness by members. We're going to talk with Kansas Congressman Ron Estes, a member of the House Budget Committee, a little bit later. And the Supreme Court today heard oral arguments in a case involving the abortion pill and the FDA dropping safety guidelines that puts women in great peril.
Don't you think the FDA should have continued to require reporting of non-fatal consequences?
Your Honor, the FDA decided not to continue that reporting requirement in 2016 based on more than 15 years of a well-established safety profile when that reporting was required. There is no drug on the market today under any REMS that requires the kind of reporting that the plaintiffs are saying should be reimposed here.
That was Justice Samuel Alito and the attorney for the pharmaceutical company that makes the abortion pill, Jessica Ellsworth. Now, we're going to get a readout on today's hearing from FRC's Mary Sock a little bit later here on Washington Watch and talk about why this standard of oversight needs to be in place for this pill, the abortion pill, the dangers associated with it. And the hissy fits at MSNBC continue over the hiring of former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as a political commentator.
It's about our system of government and undermining elections and going after democracy as an ongoing project.
That was MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, who just doesn't want competition. She wants to be able to take down democracy all on her own. We're going to talk about how the cancerous cancel culture is spreading and will eventually take the life of free speech in our country and free elections if it is not stopped. And I hear their words, but I don't believe what they're saying.
First of all, the relationship between the United States and Israel is one that is longstanding. They are a longstanding ally of the United States. And the president has made clear that the United States will always support Israel's right to defend itself. That was true before our action in the Security Council yesterday. It remains true today.
That was State Department spokesman Matthew Miller earlier today saying nothing has changed, even though the U.S. threw Israel under the global goon bus at the United Nations Security Council yesterday. We're going to talk with Ken Blackwell, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. But as we dive into today's issues, I want you to remember this. The bedrock principles that guide us here at Washington Watch, faith, family, and freedom. Those are not just words. They're values that form the very foundation of our nation. All right, a massive cargo ship lost power earlier today in the port of Baltimore, striking a major bridge and causing it to collapse. Local and federal officials have declared the event as an accident, noting the ship issued a Mayday call prior to striking the bridge. Now, this provided a brief opportunity for officials to stop cars and attempt an evacuation. Though declared an accident, this morning's events provide yet another look at the vulnerability of our nation's infrastructure. And it follows repeated warnings from security officials of the many targets that remain exposed to possible attack. This is a byproduct of America's weakness on the global stage. Joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Randy Weber. He serves on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce and the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He represents the 14th Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Weber, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, Congressman, I know, like all of us, your thoughts and prayers are with those affected by this tragedy in the Baltimore Harbor today. But what is your reaction to this when you think of the vulnerabilities that we have for planned attacks, deliberate incidents that could take place in our country when it comes to our infrastructure?
Well, two things. It highlights exactly what you're saying, that we ought to be focused, extremely focused on that. As you said, the country is at an all-time, our standing in the world because of Joe Biden is extremely weak right now. They ought to maybe have a program where these ships that are coming in under our infrastructure ought to be inspected on a more regular basis and ought to be accountable for those kinds of inspections so that we can know for sure that they're going to be safe, they're going to be efficient, they're going to be powered, and something like this doesn't happen again.
I mean, we've got a lot of bridges in America, but in particular your state of Texas with the Gulf Coast, my home state of Louisiana. These are issues that are very real each and every day as cargo containers come in to our ports.
Yeah, they really are. And, of course, trade, especially in the energy, of course, as you know, Biden has done his best to shut down energy. For example, LNG exports. So we got to be able to trade. And not only that, Tony, but the Port of Beaumont in my District 14 moves more military personnel and equipment out of the country than anybody else. We've got to be sure that our military can get where they need to get.
Right. Yeah, that's actually another critical aspect of this. So let's talk about the warnings that we've had recently about a heightened risk to both cyber and physical attacks on the nation's power grid. As a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee, this is something that is of great importance to you.
Well, it is. And, of course, Texas has our own grid, as you know. People are trying to push me to try to get it on the federal grid, and I'm saying no. We want Texas to be responsible for our own grid. There's really about four incidents that have happened of late, and Republicans are focused on trying to mitigate those risks from all hazards. They might be physical, they might be cyber, weather attacks, weather. And so local customers are impacted, and so these energy companies have got to deal with local state officials because they're in charge of setting the rates. But having said that, there's about four things that have happened here recently. February the 6th, 2023, people were arrested for planning to attack in Baltimore, Maryland, electric subdivision. And then on December 25th, 2022, four electric distribution substations in Tacoma, Washington were physically attacked. 3 weeks earlier, Moore County, North Carolina, they were attacked. And on December 2022, two electrical substations in North Carolina, Moore County, were attacked. We were actually there and toured those. We have got to harden our grid. It's just that simple.
How do we do that? What's required? I don't think there's any money allocated in the current budget that was signed into place to do that. But this is something that's been brought up over and over again.
Well, one way we do it, Tony, is I drive through my beloved state of Texas and yours of Louisiana, too. You see power stations and power substations. usually they're protected by a high fence with maybe it's a 6 or 8 foot fence with barbed wire at the top. What we probably need is hardened walls, concrete walls, because in Moore County, North Carolina, they actually had spent shell casings. 27 shots were fired. And whoever did this was an expert, knew exactly what they were doing, because what they did was they targeted all of the transformers and the transformer oil tanks in such a manner that they drained all the oil, not just out of the shots were well placed at the bottom of each transformer and the bottom of the tank, so that once that oil, which is the coolant for transformers to make sure the plant can operate, once that was gone, that plant was over.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I was in Israel the week before last and noticed that all of their critical infrastructure, power, water, was guarded in that way to protect it from terrorist attacks or other nefarious operations. In fact, I see, for those who are viewing, they can see the top of your tie. You have a tie on it. It appears to be supportive of Israel. If you're listening, you can't see it. But I want to get your reaction to the United Nations, or the U.S. at the United Nations Security Council yesterday, essentially throwing Israel under the bus. It's only like there's only been three other votes in which the U.S. abstained when Israel was in the target of a resolution. 53 times over the last 7 decades, we have stood to defend them with vetoes. Something's changed.
You know, first of all, I'm going to be in Israel day after tomorrow. Me and my bride are going. We're going to be there at the Jesus tomb. That's where they believe this tomb was on Easter Sunday. So it's going to be a great trip. But you're absolutely right. And I think I forget the State Department's guy's name, Matthew, was it Miller? Yeah. Who said that, you know, we stand with Israel. I'm like, are you kidding me? And you know this, Tony, 60-70% of the resolutions that come out of the United Nations are anti-Israel. And in my great district, we love Israel, the Jewish people. And we have a saying, get the United Nations out of the United States and the United States out of the United Nations. It is absolutely pure hypocrisy for him to indicate anything else.
Well, I know you are going to be over in Israel with my friend Heather Johnston, and you're going to have a great trip, very informative. I've helped her on a couple occasions lead those trips, very informative, and you're going to be able to see some things on the eastern part of Israel, a.k.a. the West Bank, that underscores why we cannot go down this path of a two-state solution and give half the country away.
Well, when you've got Hamas, who's committed to destroying all the Jews, all of Israel, you want to give them a place to live? They've got to take Hamas out, completely out, is what Israel has got to do. Yes, Churchill said war is hell. There's going to be some kind of damage, collateral damage, and we regret that. But Israel's got to defend itself, and we have got to defend with them.
Absolutely. We need to stand with them. As I've said before, our future is intertwined with theirs. Randy Weber, always great to see you. Safe travels. We'll be praying for your safety.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be here.
All right. Congressman Randy Weber of Texas. All right. After the break, the GOP's razor-thin electoral margin in the House is about to shrink even further. What's the way forward for Republicans? We're going to talk about that after the break. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. And by the way, as we were talking about Israel, if you would like to join us in standing with and praying for Israel, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. And we'll give you a link. We'll give you some prayer points that we're keeping updated, as well as some events coming up related to Israel. So text Israel to 67742. All right, this week, both chambers of Congress have left Washington for a two-week recess. But when House Republicans return, their razor-thin majority that they hold in the House will shrink even further. Following the news that Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher will leave early, the Republican conference in the House will soon hold a mere one-vote majority when it comes to voting. And with the recent spending bill exposing fractures within the GOP, how will House Speaker Mike Johnson navigate this razor-thin majority moving forward? Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Ron Estes. He serves on the House Committee on Ways and Means and the House Budget Committee and the House Committee on Education and Workforce. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Kansas. Congressman Estes, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, great. Thank you. It's nice to be back.
So you guys are working with a historically thin margin. How's that going to work out?
Yeah, it really is. And obviously, after the election in 2022, it was a thin margin to begin with. And, you know, through the normal course of the session, we have people that either take retirement or pass away, or other issues that come up. And so Speaker Johnson's been dealt a tough hand. You know, when he was elected Speaker, the problems didn't magically go away. He still has had to work to address some of these issues out there. And most recently, he's been trying to struggle through the fiscal appropriations for fiscal year 2024. And that's now behind him, that problem that he inherited. And so now we've got to focus on what do we do moving forward. And it's going to be a challenge for all of us as we focus on, particularly from a fiscal approach, is we can't continue down the same route we're headed on because the debt's continuing to grow. And there's lots of different ideas circulating among my colleagues about how to address that. But there's a growing recognition that we've got to do something about it. And I'm looking forward to being involved with Speaker Johnson as we work for the 2025 appropriations process and be able to make some of those first steps in making that happen.
You voted against the omnibus bill, the six-bill package. I would have voted against it. In fact, I told the Speaker I was opposed to it because it had some bad stuff in it, a lot of bad stuff in it. But as you pointed out, the framework was already put in place when he came in. He had very little room to work with. And, you know, many people have said, well, we should have a government shutdown. And I discussed that with him, and I know he's discussed that with the conference. But at some point in time, you got to open the government back up. And with such a slim majority of Republicans, there are some Republicans that I think would never vote to open it back up under the conditions that would be presented. So in the end, you'd probably have to negotiate with Democrats, and the end could be worse than the former in terms of what you would have to agree to.
It really is. I mean, the Speaker really had his hands tied going through that process. And as you said, there are a lot of bad things in the appropriations bills that just passed. I mean, not the least of which is just the amount of money. And
yeah.
Even though it's talked about, it's, 1.59 or 1.66, there's actually, when you look at the all-in spending for fiscal year 24, it's going to be $1.79 trillion based on all of that amount of spending. And then you look at there's so many of the other provisions, whether it dealt with funding, all these earmarked fundings for special pet projects by a lot of senators and even quite a few House members as well. There's just a lot of issues in there that we didn't want to fund the government on, and nothing to address fixing the issues with the southern border and the issue and the northern border too.
Right.
The issues that are going on there. So the Speaker had a tough road to deal with, and continuing resolutions aren't a good solution.
No.
Government shutdown doesn't solve those problems. So we've got to move forward from here.
And so going forward, working on the budget for next year, you're able to establish the parameters first. And get that over to the Senate and put them into a position to have to negotiate over what the House passes. So the dynamics change now. This will be a much better process to go through than what we just went through. But I want to ask you this question, Congressman Estes. You know, before you left, one of your colleagues, Marjorie Taylor Greene, moved to vacate the chair, not as a privilege motion, but just to kind of hang it over the head of the Speaker. Play clip 15, please.
I filed the motion to vacate today, but it's more of a warning and a pink slip.
Did the Republicans not learn their lesson in what we went through after McCarthy was ousted?
I haven't talked to Marjorie about what her thought process was in doing that. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of issues that we need to address, and we've got the appropriations process behind us now for fiscal 2024. But we've got to address on other issues as well, and addressing the U.S. border security, addressing support for Ukraine, for Israel, for Taiwan, and there's mixed belief and preferences amongst the Republicans as well as amongst the Democrats in both the House and the Senate, and those are the issues now that we've got to pivot to while we're starting to work on the 2025.
Yeah.
Appropriations process, and hopefully we'll have calmer heads to move forward.
I hope so, because this is like playing with a loaded gun in a crowded room. I mean, with such slim majorities, you could actually, for the first time in the history of the Congress, Republicans could lose control of the Congress mid-session if they vacate the chair and the Democrats and a few Republicans get with them.
And that would be, well, it'd be historic if to happen. As you said, it's never happened before. I don't think that's not what Republicans want. I mean, we want to move forward. We want to make some positive direction and changing some of the bad habits that Washington has been in for decades now. And that's the focus that we should be putting our effort into and want to continue down that route.
Well, and I appreciate the fact, Congressman Estes, that is your focus, and you have held firm to your convictions and beliefs and your commitments to your constituents, and those are conservative convictions, which we also appreciate here at Family Research Council. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you.
All right, Congressman Estes from Kansas, another one of the good guys. There's many. Need to pray for him. Need to pray for the Speaker. Pray that they will come together and move forward in a positive way. All right, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments today on the Biden abortion pill. We're going to talk about that after the break, so don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clausen, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Website is tonyperkins.com. All right, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments today in the case of U.S. Food and Drug Administration versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, which will determine whether the FDA will be held accountable for removing protections it once deemed necessary for the health and safety of women using the abortion drug mifepristone. Now, since granting approval, the FDA has removed nearly every safety standard for women's health and safety from these chemical abortion pills, which, by the way, now account for more than 60% of abortions. Now, this is really paving the way for these pills to be sold through the mail, which would allow the Biden administration to circumvent the pro-life laws that have passed in a majority of the states. Now, we know that a decision will not be released until June at the earliest, but what did we learn from today's hearing? Joining me now to discuss this, Mary Sock. She is the director of the Center for Human Dignity at the Family Research Council, and she spoke on the steps of the Supreme Court this morning at a rally. Mary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tony.
All right, so you spoke at a rally at the Supreme Court today, but you also heard the oral arguments that took place inside the building. What can you tell us?
There seemed to be a lot of question on standing in this case. Did the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine have standing to bring this suit against the FDA, to hold the FDA accountable for removing the safety standards? We know that the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine represents physicians who work in emergency rooms, who have experienced women coming into their emergency room after ingesting mifepristone and needing emergency care. These women don't, these physicians don't have time to register a conscientious objection. These women are in distress and they're in immediate need of care. And this puts pro-life physicians in a terrible situation where they are then complicit in what the abortion industry is trying to do.
Mary, they also have to clean up the mess created by this. So, you know, I know standing is a legal term as to whether or not they can bring a suit, but certainly they are the ones that are impacted by this because they are the ones that are left to care for the women who the big pharma and the Biden administration could care less about sending these pills oftentimes through the mail without any type of medical oversight. It's these doctors that are going to have to tend to these women.
Yes, and I think we need to recognize the volume of women that that are going to the ER because of this. The FDA's own label lists that between 2.9 and 4.6% of women who take mifepristone will need to go to the ER following the use of that drug. And what that comes out to, based on the number of abortions that Guttmacher has reported for each year, is about 20,000 women. That's not something that's as safe as Tylenol, which they're constantly trying to tell us it is.
Now, this was a part of the discussion in the court that the proponents of this change were saying, well, just because there's an increase in ER visits doesn't really mean anything.
Right. The attorney for the FDA, Elizabeth Perlager, she said that, you know, an increased number of visits to the ER, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were serious adverse events. Many women could have gone to the ER just because they had bleeding, heavy bleeding. And my question for her would be, well, how is a woman who is not a physician supposed to know if her heavy bleeding is hemorrhaging? How is she supposed to know if she's in a life-threatening situation? Shouldn't that burden be on the person who gave her that abortion drug? And that is why that FDA safety standard should be there. Of course, we know that every use of the abortion drug is tragic because it takes an unborn child's life. But this removal of the safety standard makes it especially tragic for children and their mother.
So, Mary, the term effects, that is actually a term that's used to kind of track these medical incidents, but not happening when it comes to the abortion pill. Isn't that an issue here?
Right. So the FDA actually removed the requirement for prescribers to report adverse events using mifepristone to Danco, and then for Danco then would report those to the FDA. Danco was asked in this case, you know, why wouldn't you want to know the number of adverse events about this drug? And of course, they hemmed and hawed about how, well, Danco still has to report. It's just prescribers who don't have to report. Well, how many people are calling up the manufacturer of the drug company to tell them, hey, I had an adverse reaction to the drug? That's just not happening. So it's unrealistic to expect that process.
So it's smoke and mirrors. They're just trying to cover the tracks so they can say, well, these increase in ER visits don't necessarily mean adverse events. But how do we know? Because we're not tracking it.
Exactly. And that's what the FDA is using for all of this. But it is important to recognize the FDA admits that they know that 2.9 to 4.6% of women will head to the ER following the use of this drug. This is not dumping on the emergency room doctors. That's not something that just happens to happen by accident. That's a feature of the use of mifepristone.
Very quickly, Mary, we're up against the break, but we filed an amicus brief in this case. Were those aspects addressed today?
No, one portion of it that was not addressed that I wish had been was the problem of intimate partner violence and the use of mifepristone. There have been cases, a recent case in Texas, where a woman who was thrilled to be pregnant with her child, her husband ended up poisoning her water with mifepristone, trying to cause the abortion of her poor child. That
Mary,
baby, thankfully, was born healthy.
Mary, we're up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us today. Folks, stick around because we're coming back with more Washington Watch. Ken Blackwell joins me next. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. All right, try to squeeze every second out of these segments because so much information. But I want you to be praying for the court as they will deliberate behind closed doors what they heard today, and then they will arrive at their decision really in the next few days. Right? Their decision will not come out probably until June or later, but it will be decided very soon. They usually get together each week, generally on Fridays, but this is a Good Friday, so they probably won't gather on Friday. Could be Thursday. I'm not sure. But you need to be praying that they would arrive at the right decision. Our word for today comes from Numbers chapter 28. Command the children of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my offerings made by fire is a sweet aroma to me. You shall be careful to offer to me at their appointed time. Now, except for the Day of Atonement, which was a day of fasting, the other festivals were times of celebration. God wants us to celebrate. He just needs to be at the center of the festivity. Recall Nehemiah's words after they had returned from captivity to Jerusalem and rebuilt the walls, and the word of God was read to them. All the people wept as they heard the words of the law. But Nehemiah said, go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet wine, and send portions to anyone who has nothing ready. For this day is holy to our Lord, and do not be grieved, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. God's desire for you as you walk in fellowship and obedience to Him is to experience His joy. I invite you to join me each weekday as we journey through the Bible to find out how. Text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. That's one text that can change your life. Well, yesterday, in a very rare move, the Biden administration allowed the United Nations Security Council to pass a resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. Generally, the U.S. has used its veto power to protect Israel from the UN, vetoing over 50 Security Council resolutions over the last 70 years. The administration says it's not a reflection of a change in U.S. policy toward Israel, but given that the present situation is the most dangerous Israel has faced in nearly 76 years since the modern state of Israel was established, those words ring hollow. Joining me now to discuss this, Ken Blackwell, is a FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance and former Ambassador to the United Nations for Human Rights. He was a part of a meeting today with the Israeli Defense Minister Gallant. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Hey, Tony, it's always good to be with you.
So yesterday's UN Security Council vote clearly represents a win for Hamas. How should we interpret this? The administration says this is not a change in policy, but I'm hard-pressed to see it that way.
Tony, that's a classic case of don't believe your lying ears and eyes. This is a wholesale sellout to the historic alliance between the U.S. And Israel. The reality is that they allow the inmates to control the United Nations inmates, as I call them. And the reason I call them that, Tony, is because there are many folks on the jury that actually should be in the dock, human rights violators. Right. And the fact that we didn't use every bit of muscle we had to stop this false narrative that Hamas and Hezbollah and the Communist Party of China and all of the wrongdoers are perpetuating. Biden can't have it any other way than it was a wholesale sellout of Israel.
That's why the United States has maintained that veto power on the United Nations Security Council, because of these global goons that you said that should not be on the council overseeing, international security issues. You were in a meeting today at the U.S. At the Israeli embassy in Washington. What can you tell us about the meeting?
Well, the meeting was to take a look at the atrocities that took place on October the 7th. There is a 47-minute documentary that has been pulled together. Parts of this documentary were pulled from not only victims but captured Hamas terrorists, and so it was gruesome.
It's disturbing.
It just underscored the rampant murder and rape and burning and destruction of a group of terrorists that put on Israel the worst assault on Jews since the Holocaust.
So to put it in
scale, Tony, you know, this was greater, given the size of the population, this was greater than 9/11.
Right.
It was in the U.S.
But I want people to understand what transpired here, because we talk about terrorists and we think of terrorists in terms of a terrorist strike. They hit and they move away. This was an organized terrorist army. They were invading Israel. Their goal was to actually take these communities that they invaded and hold that territory. But they were actually slowed down by what happened at the Nova Music Festival site about a half a mile from the Gaza border, where a lot of this demonic, I would just describe it, activity took place, the brutality that we saw. This is not what modern armies do. They don't rape, they don't pillage, they don't torture. That's what they did here. So where's the international outcry? Where's the United Nations saying Hamas needs to release the remaining 124 hostages that are being held, or 134 hostages being held, and let them go and drop their arms and Hamas surrender? Where's that cry?
Their silence is deafening. These are anti-American, anti-Israel forces that, have been let loose in the United Nations to perpetuate a false narrative. The left talks about deniers, whether they're talking about election deniers, and we can get back on that in a little bit. But let me just tell you, what I witnessed in front of the Israeli embassy today with loudspeakers and sirens and attempts to intimidate folks who were going into the embassy. It was hard for me to believe that this was allowed in America.
So this was in front of the embassy on the street, trying to disrupt the meetings going on inside, but also trying to block people from going in?
Yeah, absolutely. As you and I have talked about it, it is this rampant cancer of culture. You know,
We experienced that at the Family Research Council here in our building back during COVID when we had our Pray Vote Stand Summit, and they held this music festival in front of our building designed to drown out our ability to broadcast. I mean, this is how the left works. They don't want a debate. They don't want a discussion. They want to silence anyone who doesn't agree with them.
Oh, absolutely. And the handmaidens in the media, it's just astounding. What I'm starting to get now, I can't imagine that we give public dollars to NPR. I listened to them a couple of mornings over the last couple of weeks, and it is just they are the communications center for Hamas.
Right. Well, speaking of the media, let me switch gears here. We're going to continue to stay on the Israel issue because, folks, we need to pray for Israel and stand with him. In my meeting with the prime minister, that's what he asked for. He knows that evangelicals, Bible-believing Christians, understand the significance of the modern state of Israel and the Jewish people, and we need to stand with them. So I want to encourage you, if you'll stand with us and pray for Israel, text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Just watching what the left and others are doing just puts a fine point on the fact that we need to stand for and stand with Israel. All right, so Ken, let's talk about our friend, a former chair of the RNC, who we worked very closely with, and I grew to respect after having a disagreement with. I found that she was actually very strong on the life issue, helping us on a number of issues, Ronna McDaniel. And so the NBC offered a contract, and the folks went berserk over there, the political operatives. I want to play a clip here that was on Sunday on Meet the Press. This is Chuck Todd. Play clip six.
Look, let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract.
If this weren't so sad, it would be laughable, given the history of so many of the talking heads and correspondents there at NBC. Now, Ronna was being hired to be a political consultant, you know, to talk during the election cycle. Chuck Todd worked for Democratic campaigns. You got George Stephanopoulos. He worked in the White House. You got Psaki, who has her own show there. She was the press secretary in the White House. You've got Morning Joe, who is a rhino. He's got a program. The issue is whether or not you're a conservative. There's no room for conservative voices at NBC or MSNBC.
Tony, it was classic doublespeaks. You just think about it. Barbara Boxer, John Conyers, Stephanie Tubbs, the late Stephanie Tubbs Jones. I can go down a list of folks who Chuck Todd brought on Meet the Press who were election deniers. I was sued 38 times. There were 38 allegations made that I stole the election. Stephanie Tubbs Jones decided, and Barbara Boxer, to challenge the Ohio electors. Right. And now, because Republicans challenged the system, what the left will do is that they will silence. They don't want debate. They don't want partners. They just what they want, Tony, are puppets.
That's right. And there can be no conversation It used to be on MSNBC, and I mentioned this yesterday, back when I first came to FRC over 20 years ago, I was on MSNBC almost every week with Chris Matthews. There used to be a time when there were debates. That doesn't happen anymore. They want to silence the political opposition. This is the cancer of the cancel culture. It's spreading. I mean, first it was us, you know, that believed that marriage is between a man and a woman, that, you know, we're actually created, as Jesus said, as male and female. And then it's gone to anyone who does not buy their line. Now, you talk about election deniers. Here is Katie, I think it's Fang. She is the host of MSNBC's The Katie Fang Show. Never watched it. Don't even know who she is. But I saw this clip. This was in April of 2023. Play clip five.
You want to talk about stolen election? Donald Trump stole that election in 2016.
What was that an election denier?
Tony, Jimmy Carter in 2019 was still saying that Donald Trump was not the properly elected president. In 2019, Jimmy Carter, former President Jimmy Carter. And now all of us, I didn't hear any of them criticize him.
Joe Biden even did. I mean, look, it's a double standard. But here's what our folks need to understand. This is the legacy media. You either see it their way and you talk about it their way, or you don't get a voice.
The highway.
Yeah, it's the highway. You get no voice. And so our folks need to realize you cannot watch the legacy media and think you're hearing truth. You are hearing propaganda from the left, especially MSNBC and NBC. I mean, they are nothing more than the bullhorn for the leftist Democratic Party in this country.
They are the vanguard of relativism, moral relativism. It's a direct assault. These folks don't pursue truth because they don't believe there is an objective truth. That's why they want to run God and faith out of the public square, because they don't believe that there's an objective moral truth. What they believe, if it feels good, if it serves our power, grab, it's good. That's the way they think.
I want to play, just to show the hypocrisy here, not that I have to, but, you know, I want folks to see it. Rachel Maddow, clip number three.
It's about our system of government and undermining elections and going after democracy as an ongoing project.
So that's why she's opposed to Rana, who was the chair of the RNC advocating for Republican candidates, because she questioned the election outcome like so many on the Democratic side did about the 2016 election. How can they get away with such blatant hypocrisy?
Tony, and people are moving away from them in droves. That is why this program, Washington Watch, is so important. And there are folks who have podcasts and their own programming, you know, like Tucker Carlson and what have you, where people are saying we're not going to be force-fed this nonsense.
Yeah. Enough is enough. Folks, the curtain has been pulled back. Ken Blackwell, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
God bless you, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right, folks, again, I would encourage you to be praying for Israel, to stand for and pray with Israel. This is Israel is in one of the most significant, challenging moments since the modern day Israel, nation of Israel, was established. We need to stand with them. Text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, folks, out of time for today, but thanks for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, you've done everything you can do when you prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.